So today and throughout December, we're going to be looking at Hebrews chapter 1. And we're going to be looking at verses 1 through 4, Hebrews chapter 1. And what we're going to be looking at are, it says in your bulletin that if Jesus is the answer, what is the question? And each Sunday is going to be focused on a different question that Jesus answers. Before I get into that, let's just read the passage. Hebrews chapter 1, it's a powerful passage. There's so much truth packed into these verses. Hebrews chapter 1, verses 1 through 4. God, after he spoke long ago to the fathers and the prophets in many portions and in many ways, in these last days has spoken to us in his Son, whom he appointed heir of all things, through whom also he made the world. And he is the radiance of his glory and the exact representation of his nature and upholds all things by the word of his power. When he made purification of sins, he sat down at the right hand of the majesty on high. Having become as much better than the angels as he has inherited a more excellent name than they. I'm sure all of us have experienced at one time or another a question concerning God or a question concerning Jesus. And it's either coming from somebody else or possibly something that you have said in the past is a question concerning Jesus. And when the idea of the question becomes of the idea of Jesus, a lot of times it ties into that Christians need to be explaining something. It's the idea of them saying, if God is a loving God, prove to us that truth. Prove to us that God is a loving God. If God's a loving God, then why do we have wars? Why do we have tragedies? Why do we have pain? If Jesus loves me, then why is my life the way that it is? Which leads me to the question of today. The question of today is the idea of who really cares? Who really cares? I'm sure you have thought that. I'm sure you have spoken that in your own life at many times. Who really cares? Does anybody care about what I am facing or what I am going through? Does anybody understand? Does anybody get it? I've talked to many people at times who have stated, and they have said several times, why me? It doesn't seem like it happens to everybody else. Why is my life the way that it is? When I look at so-and-so and I say, why can't my life be like theirs? Why is my family the way that it is? When I look at so-and-so and I see how their family is and I ask the question, why can't my life be like theirs? Why is my job like my job? When I look at so-and-so and I see what their job is like. Why is my church like my church? And I look at so-and-so and I see what their church is like. And the list just goes on and on and on of asking the question, does anybody care? Does anybody really care what I'm facing? You've probably had it happen to you before. It probably happened this morning. I'm sure that when you came in, you probably received the question of some sort in so many words saying something to the effect of, how are you doing? Right? Now, the follow-up question to that is, how many of us told the truth? And the 100% truth? Or, as I've gotten many times, because somebody comes in, I say, how are you doing? And their response is, how much time do you have? Because it's going to be a long story. But, you know, we're asked those questions, how are you doing? And what do we normally say? Fine, good, great. I've even heard people say, fantastic. I've heard people say, if I was any better, I'd be scared. And the list just goes on and on of how we respond to those questions. However, the reality is, life hurts. Life is difficult. A lot of times, life just plain stinks. And a lot of times you just don't get it. and you just don't understand, and you're looking around your life and you're saying, why? And you're looking, and we're naturally compare ourselves to others, as I shared. And the danger in that is we become to that point where we start to think we're the only one. We're the only one that's facing this. Nobody's ever faced this. And then if somebody else tells us, if somebody else comes up and says, no, 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 I know exactly what you're saying. I face the same thing. Then we almost get into a competition trying to prove to them that ours is worse than theirs. And we start to say, yeah, you might have experienced that, but you haven't experienced this. Yeah, you have, might have experienced, but you really haven't experienced that. Yeah, you might have experienced that. You would. I don't know if any of you have ever overheard two pastors or more discussing or having a conversation. It turns into that at times. Before you know it, it turns into a competition of, yeah, let me tell you how bad mine's been. Let me tell you how bad my first experience was in ministry. Let me tell you how horrible mine was. And it continues to go on, and we get to that point as if we think we're the only one. And then the bottom line of that question becomes, does God really care? Does Jesus really care? Because I'm convinced if we would believe that, 1,000%, that we might do things a little different. And our attitudes might be different at times if we believe it every second that he does in fact care about me and what I'm facing, and he knows exactly what's going on and he's involved in my life. Because too many times we face a trial, we face a difficulty, we face something we don't understand, and what happens is we immediately get to the point where we begin to wonder, is he really here, or is he distant off somewhere? Is he actually here? Well, in this passage alone answers that question. When he says, God, after he spoke long ago to the fathers. Now, if you stop and think about that for a moment, at the very beginning in the first verse, he's saying the word God. So he's talking about God, and from what we know from God, based upon the scriptures, this goes all the way back to Genesis, in the beginning, God, where he created all things and he was the main creator. And at the beginning of this passage, he says, we know that in the past, God. So the one who's doing this is God. I know that seems very basic. I know that seems elementary. And I know that you look at it and say, why would we spend so much time on one word? But that's very important for us to understand that God is the main theme of this passage. And he's speaking about God. And then what does he tell us that is happening? He said that God, after he spoke long ago to the fathers. Think about that for a moment. After he spoke. So we have two things happening, or one thing happening in this passage from one person who is God, who is the source. And the focus is God and he spoke. God spoke. I want you to think about that for just one moment. God spoke. Let that resonate with you for a second. Because I think that's one concept of our theology and our belief in God that we overlook and we gloss over as if it's nothing. God spoke. And when we identify who God is the creator of the universe. He's the one who started it all from the very beginning. He's the source of everything. He's the one who created the world. He's the one followed his people throughout the Old Testament. He's the one that saved people. He's the one that went through, and he's the main one. There is nobody else other than him. And we have this truth that he himself actually spoke. I want you to think about what that means for a moment when we say that God spoke, because I think we forget about that in our culture today, about God speaking. We joke a lot. I've joked a lot. Anytime my children come in, or my wife comes in, or somebody and says, did you call my name? I thought I heard you call. I always say, no, next time say, speak, Lord, for your servant is listening. But the idea of God actually speaking shows us how much he cared about being involved in the lives of his creation. It's not as if he created the world and he created mankind and he disappeared and said, you guys just figure it out. But he's continually having relationship with mankind and he continually spoke. Now the question becomes, how did he speak? They explain that. God, after he spoke long ago to the fathers, to the forefathers, in the prophets. It was through the prophets that God spoke. As we're talking Old Testament now, it was through the prophets. Now, if you get the picture of how God spoke, this is really an amazing concept, because the idea of God speaking was only through the prophets. It was only through the messenger, nobody else. So, get the idea. Here you are. It's a Monday. Things are going bad for you. It's frustrating. The week just started. Trials, tribulations, whatever you wanna say, stress, anxiety. Man, it'd be nice if I heard from God. You check. Oh, the prophet isn't in on Mondays. So I can't hear from God today. I'm gonna have to wait till the next day. So the next day comes up. Oh, the prophet isn't in on Tuesdays. And the list continues. So you literally would have to wait for the prophet to actually come out and give the message from God. Now, when the prophet came out and gave his message, this was not the prophet's message. He was just simply the messenger. So he was the vehicle by which God used to bring forth his message and to speak to his people. So what he's telling us, the writer of Hebrews, is that in the past, God spoke through the prophets. It was through these individuals called prophets. Everybody had to wait and hear from the prophet. That's why throughout the Old Testament you hear, "Thus saith the Lord," or "This is the word of the Lord." When the prophet came out, this was it. They opened their mouth. It's not God. It's not them speaking. It is God, and God is giving them the message that they have for them, that God has for them in that moment. Now, somebody could make a case and say, that doesn't sound like a very loving God. That doesn't sound like a very caring God, because he's waiting on, he's making his people wait. But at the same time, we know that God's timing is perfect. And we also know that this tells us that God cared enough to still find a way to communicate with his people. And at this time, it was through the prophets. He continues on and he says, God, after he spoke long ago to the fathers and the prophets in many portions and in many ways. So we're talking about something very diverse that took place, that when God spoke through the prophets, it wasn't just one prophet or one type. It wasn't just one particular way. It was many types and various ways. Somebody who did an in-depth study on this, Dr. Zodiades, I think I've shared this with you before, Dr. Spiro Zodiades, he was somebody who really changed my life. If you've ever seen if you've never heard of his name before, there's several books that he has written. He's not as popular as he once was, but if you've ever seen the Complete Word Study New Testament or the Key Word Study New Testament with the Greek and the Hebrew, that was by him. He was a Greek scholar, and I remember I had the opportunity of meeting him one day. Which was amazing. And I remember I walked in, they said, would you like to meet Dr. Zodiades? And I said, sure. And it was at a banquet. They take me over, they show me this short guy here that didn't look like he could muster up anything. And he says, he found out I was a preacher, and he says, sit down, preacher, sit down. And I sat down right beside him. He immediately whipped out his Greek New Testament and began to explain to me what God was revealing to him that week that he was studying. And it was shortly after that he passed away. But that really was amazing, to see a man of his age at the time still studying the Greek in depth and so excited just to share it with a stranger of what God was sharing. It just happened to be Hebrews chapter 1, verse 1 that he was studying that day. And this is what he explained to me. I will never forget it. He explained to me, when he says, God, after he spoke long ago to the fathers and the prophets in many portions and in many ways, he explained that in the Greek text, that those two terms together means that it is divided up, that it is separated, that's what it means, that it's not one thing, but it's one thing with many, many portions or many parts to it. And then he just smiled and he looked at me and he had his crooked finger. He looked right at me just like this. And he said, no one person can hold all of God's truth. And I was like, wow. That's the conclusion of the idea of the prophets who spoke. Why did God do it in various ways and through so many and many times? Because not one person can contain all of God's truth. Now, when I say that, that's one of those statements where you might be sitting there and you're waiting for that common thing that happens in a sermon, that common term of but, right? Waiting for the conjunction to jump in there. It happens a lot, you know, they're like, okay, we get it, Chad, but you now move on to the positive side. No one person can contain or have all of God's truth. And look at what he says next. God, after he spoke long ago to the fathers and the prophets in many portions and in many ways, in these last days has spoken to us in his Son. So you take every single thing, all the messages that the prophets had, every single thing they had, the diversity of that, and in many ways and in many forms that God spoke, and you can take it and mix it all together and come up with the one person who is actually speaking to us in these last days, according to the writer, and that is the person of Jesus Christ, his Son. So can one person contain all of God's truth? Yes, but it's actually God himself, because it's Jesus, the Son of God. Jesus, he's the one who came. And this is the part that I think we forget about, and we're forgetting about this, I think, more and more in our culture today when it comes to Christianity. Because one of the things that I see happening often is we have this plus sign. We have this plus sign, right? All of us have this plus sign. What plus sign? What does it mean? It means addition, right? It means you're adding something, correct? Okay, so, but we all kind of have that with us. You don't think you do? You may be sitting there saying, Chad, I don't know where you're going with this, but I don't think I carry around a plus sign. Yes, you do. You carry around a plus sign. The next time you go out to eat, maybe you're going to go out to lunch today, and you go in, and what are they going to do? They're going to ask you, well, you know, you're going to order, and they're going to say, would you also like to add this? How many times has that worked on you, by the way? I want you to think about something. And Mike and I have experienced this. At times, Mike and I will go to lunch from the office, and it's amazing. We'll go in. It's amazing what a picture will do, isn't it? I mean, you're saying to yourself, I'm not going to get much for lunch today, not going to, and then you walk into this huge billboard of this incredible looking piece of meat, and you're thinking, how could I possibly turn that down for that price? And then you go in and you begin to order, and then they start this little addition type thing where they start to add, and they start to say, oh, well, would you want to, you know, throw this in? I mean, it really is the same price, and oh, yeah, might as well. And then, oh, and would you also want to throw this in because it's only this much more? Yeah, go ahead. And by the time you're done, you got this whole tray of food that you went in for something like this, but you added. The problem is that plus sign we tend to carry when it comes to Christianity. And what takes place is we get to this idea of, yes, Jesus is the way. Do you believe Jesus is the way? Yes. Do you believe Jesus is the way? Yes. Is he your salvation? Yes. Is he your sanctification? Yes. Is he the ultimate sacrifice? Yes. Is he God? Yes. Is he real? Yes. Is he in your life? Yes. Does he speak to you? Yes. Yes. It's all Jesus, 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 Jesus. And then there's the addition. Plus. How often has that happened? Well, yeah, it's all about Jesus, but we also need. No, you don't. Well, yeah, it's all about Jesus, but we also, no, see, Jesus is it. There is nothing else other than Jesus. Jesus is it. The Christianity begins and ends with Jesus. There is nothing else to add to it. It is all about him, his Son. In the book of Colossians, he tells us that it is in him that all things hold together. It is all through Jesus. And if I could go out on a limb, which I've done before, which is fine, and you can cut it off, and say that it is impossible to be a Christian and not believe that Jesus is it. Too many times we forget the power of who Jesus is. In 1 John, I want you to think about what was stated in 1 John. Just listen to what John is saying to his writers and see if you can remember or guess who John is talking about when he states this. 1 John chapter 1. What was from the beginning? What we have heard, what we have seen with our eyes, what we have looked at and touched with our hands concerning the word of life. And the life was manifested, and we have seen and testify and proclaim to you the eternal life which was with the Father and was manifested to us. What we have seen and heard, we proclaim to you also, so that you too may have fellowship with us. And indeed, our fellowship is with the Father and with his Son, Jesus Christ. These things we write so that our joy may be made complete. One thing that John's writing about, when he's talking about that which was from the beginning and that which was manifested to us, he's echoing what he said in the Gospel of John chapter 1, verse 14, when he said, the Word became flesh and lived among us. And the whole focus of everything that John is writing about, that if this would have never happened, John would have never sat down and wrote a gospel or his epistles, because it all was based on one person and one person alone, and his name is There is no one else. You take Jesus out of history, and what do you have? You take Jesus out of Christianity, and what do you have? You take Jesus out of the scriptures, and what do you have? And did you notice what he said? When he said, and that life was manifested to us, you back up from verse 1, what was from the beginning? And yes, we're going to celebrate Christmas of Jesus coming in the manger, but do you know how many times I've had to explain, because it's so easy for us to forget, that Jesus was there from the very beginning? He didn't just start when he came in the manger. He was there from the very beginning. Colossians supports that as well, saying it was through him all things have been made. And then Colossians, Jesus was there at creation. It was through Christ from the beginning, which means don't let anyone ever tell you again you can't find Jesus in the Old Testament. Well, where's he at? In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. There's Jesus. I don't see Jesus mentioned. It doesn't have to be mentioned. He was there from the beginning. That's who he was. So what happened at Christmas time? It was just a different manifestation. That's all it was. It wasn't somebody new. It was a different manifestation of God actually becoming flesh and living and dwelling among us. That's Jesus. I had a mentor many years ago who put it this way. He said, Jesus is the answer to every question. Think about it for a moment. How are we going to get through this, Jesus? Well, what's the answer to this, Jesus? What about the issues in my home, Jesus? What about the issues at work, Jesus? Everything comes back to Jesus. And one of the most difficult things that take place is that so many times we take him out of the picture, albeit innocently sometimes, and we don't even realize we are, but we kind of take him out of the picture, and then we wonder, does anybody care? Does anybody know? He doesn't even care what I'm going through. And we compare ourselves to others and we say, look, they don't have to experience what I'm experiencing. Why am I the only one? Put Jesus back in the picture, folks. Put Jesus back in the center. Because what we are experiencing as we are celebrating Christmas and coming up during this Advent season here in December, we are celebrating the person of Jesus and him coming and becoming flesh so that we can actually know who he is. It's amazing the things that we take for granted, isn't it? Especially in today's world. It's amazing. I remember my first year here was my first trip to Swaziland. First trip over to Swaziland. And when I was told that I wouldn't have Wi-Fi every day, I thought that was, I can live with that. That's not a problem. I mean, they don't have it, so I'm sure I could, and that's fine. You know how quickly I got frustrated? Which showed me how much I depend on it. Showed me how much I depend on the internet, because if a question was ever raised about something, about anything, I don't know, well, let me check, and couldn't check. He couldn't look it up. Remember those days, folks? Remember those days when you just had to say, I don't know? I remember my father multiple times going, look it up in the encyclopedia. You know, those days are gone. Everything's through Google now. And so I remember being frustrated and not being able to access it because I was in the habit of doing it. And I'm in the habit of it now. Anytime somebody asks me anything and I want to figure something out, it's always, I'll just go to my phone. It's just easy. I'll find out. There it is. And if somebody mentions a news story, I just check my Twitter account right away. There it is. Whatever's trending, there it is. And many times they have it out there before it's even on the news story, before the main news companies even pick it up. So we take a lot of things for granted because not everybody has access like that. And that was a lesson for me to realize that, I'm taking that for granted. And if you're a techie like me, I always know where my phone is. Always. And believe me, you will, as long as I am conscious, you will never catch any of my children with my phone. Does not happen. Not everybody's like that. Miranda's different as well. Miranda has to look for her phone at times. Mine, hey, it's pretty much become my life. It's an extension of who I am, and I'm always there. And so what happens is you take that away, and we take it for granted. Same thing happens, the idea of electricity. If the power would go out, how frustrating is that? Have you ever been in a situation where the power was out and you knew the power was out? You knew it was out. No one had to tell you. You knew it was out. You even called the place to see how long do they expect it's going to be out. And they told you anywhere between 3 hours and 40 days. The power's going to be out, right? But how many of us, even though we know the power's out, go in and flip that dumb switch every single time? Because even as something as basic as electricity, we take for granted. Anybody ever had that situation where you're driving down the highway and you're watching the needle, wondering if you're going to make it to the next exit? Anyone ever travel through Arizona? Because there's that one place in Arizona, right? They have the big sign comes up. I forget how many miles it is, but it says last exit for this many miles, right? Before I ever traveled through Arizona, I never even thought much about it because there's always an exit. You can always find it, right? You know, and we've moved a lot as ministers, and one of the things that I thought, I was convinced there for a while because of where we lived, that every fast food restaurant was open 24/7. And then I moved to another town, and they close up at 9 p.m., and I'm going, what is going on? See, we begin to take things for granted. Now, I want you to think about the frustration that you would have if you had no internet, no electricity, and you were out of gas. Think of the frustration. And think about how you would be waiting for someone to help you, waiting for someone to come along, waiting for someone to spot you so that they could possibly see that you have something. And how long would you wait? How long would that be? Because you really couldn't walk somewhere. You know the miles are going to be too far, and you're kind of stranded. I want you to think about that is exactly where the people in the Old Testament were when they were coming to the end. In Malachi, God's very upset with them. They're bringing in their sacrifices. They're not being obedient, and he's very upset. Then we have the intertestamental period between Malachi and Matthew where there was no voice of God for 400 years. That's a long time to wait. 400 years on the side of the road. No internet, no electricity, wondering if someone's going to spot you. And then what happens? Jesus steps on the scene. Jesus steps into the church and says, "Here I am. I'm the one you've been waiting for. I'm the one that generations have been praying for. Here I am. It's me. Hey, guys, look over here. It's me." And yet, even today, some 2,000 years after that, of theologians studying and writing more and more resources on the history of Christianity and Jesus and theology and everything we have available to us. And yet at the same time, I can't help but think that at times, at least at times, maybe multiple times, but at least sometimes, Jesus is going, "I didn't go anywhere. I'm still here." You know, Ebenezer Scrooge, and you know all the depictions of that. One of the things that's amazing about all the stories they've done, TV, sitcoms, whatever, have always done depictions about Ebenezer Scrooge and how it's like Scrooge gets upset and starts speaking to the people. And what does the angel say? And one of the scenes especially says, "They can't see or hear you." But he wants to get his message out. He wants to get, and he wants to say something to them, but he can't. They can't see or hear you. You're just wasting your breath. They can't see or hear you. I wonder if that's how Jesus ever feels about us. He's trying desperately to speak truth into our lives, and he's trying desperately to remind us that he's there and that he never left, and yet he might still be getting a message saying, "They can't see or hear you." So this is what I'd like for you to do. When you go home today, I want you to picture and imagine Jesus in your home. Whatever the activities are in your life, the next time you go to work, I want you to imagine Jesus right there in your work. The next time, or maybe currently, if you're going through some struggle or trial and you don't understand why, I want you to imagine that Jesus is right there with you. Why do I want you to imagine that? Because it's not just your imagination. It is true. And one of the saddest things, wouldn't it be sad if he actually is there saying, "I'm here," and he's waving his hands, and we just go on and try to solve it on our own. So the answer to the question, does Jesus care? Absolutely. How do we know that he cares? Because from the beginning, God spoke, and now he's sent his son to actually speak to us so that we can know who he is and have relationship with him. Jesus can be at the forefront of your life if you let him be. Lord Jesus, we thank you today for your word and for your truth and for everything that you mean to us. And God, we just ask today that you would teach each of us what this means. Show us who you are. May we never take you for granted. May we never let you stand in this room or in any other room of our life, waving your hands, having to remind us that you're there, and we just walk on by. The truth is, you are here and you are with us right now. Show each of us what this means. Reveal yourself to each of us in a way we've never seen you before, and speak to each of us in a way that we have never heard you before. We ask all these things in your name, the name of Jesus. Amen.